Hopkins goes after it. Hanley gets there first. Hopkins out of his area. Hanley knocks it into the centre. A chance! Oh, Norwich have equalised! How awful! Oh, no! When are Ipswich Town ever going to beat them?
Hello, good morning. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, the day after Derby Day, the day after that commentary, which I'm convinced will go down in the Norwich City annals. And it was still only a draw, but as has been widely discussed, didn't necessarily feel like that. My name is Michael Bailey. I am with Head of News here at Archer Norfolk, Ian Clark, and raging Norwich City fan.
Oh, no!
Yeah, me and Dave Freeze have been saying that quite a lot since we first heard it. In fact, you picked it up first, didn't you, Dave? Dave's here. How are you, Dave?
Yeah, not too bad. It's all good fun, isn't it?
Got a big smile on his face. We've got Ipswich fan Doug Faulkner, works on the business desk.
Who are you?
Dave, I think he gave a nice brisk good morning to Doug as he walked past, and Doug was still shaking his head, I think.
I didn't have to say much, just Douglas with a big smile, which he enjoyed, or Dougiekins, as his friends call him.
One or two of them.
You didn't give him the Mick McCarthy, did you?
Not quite.
What, the old fist bump? Morning, Doug.
Or something like that.
You mean the don't you?
No, I don't.
I love getting the chance to beep on this podcast. I normally don't get the chance to do it on this. So there you go. That's one from the NRF1 podcast annals. Peter Raven's here as well, but data bank, journo, whatever you do now these days, Pete, but still a Norwich fan.
Afternoon, Michael. Yeah, getting used to walking in after a derby and not losing, but couldn't have left it any later, really.
I mean, it is remarkable. I think I just found myself laughing as I wrote on Twitter at the goal, because, and I said it in my video, I could not believe Ipswich didn't win it. 89th minute, they take the lead. It was all set for them. It had worked. This was their moment, Clarkie. How have they not come away with the victory they've been waiting for 9 years for? I mean, there were young fans in tears and then filming themselves in tears.
If you want an example of the absolute worst game management possible, I mean, you know, McCarthy must have said to me, if we get a late goal, then for goodness sake, do whatever you need to. And, you know, they're actually quite adept at doing stuff to sort of stop teams playing, like in the first half. So you would have thought they would have a plan, if they do go ahead, just to completely shut it down. And, you know, we sit at the other end, on top of the River End, and when that ball ran out towards the touchline, we all sort of looked at each other and said, right, that's it. Let's get used to losing for the first time for years. And they still couldn't see it out. And humour is the only thing you can do. I mean, I've been laughing ever since.
You're spot on, Clarkie, because Adam Webster sticking his arm up waiting for a goal kick that never came. Bielkowski comes and then retracts, and just a mess. And not only that, they had a chance to make it 2-0 literally seconds before, yeah. Which either you take or you keep it in the corner, one or the other. And I guess that sums up the Mick McCarthy reign, really. This sort of style of anti-football, yet still not really getting it right so that it's successful and you're properly good at it.
It was absurd. It was comical. And it did feel like a win, and I think it will continue to feel like a win for everyone that was there. And just looking, I've got the Pinken in front of me at the moment, and there's few empty seats, few people left after that goal went in. And that just shows why you should never leave early. I mean, that's why you go to football, for those moments. It was almost like a sort of written in the stars moment. You know, James Maddison pumps it forward, closer, just got that little flick of a header on, didn't he? And then Grant Hanley did superbly to keep the ball alive. Great cross, and it was just bonkers. It was just football.
football, hey? I mean, I was pretty... You just keep chipping in with that, Clarky. I noticed from Paddy's ratings, he gave Grant Hanley 8.5. I have to say, I was pretty close to delivering my first 9 for Grant on Sunday. I thought he was immense for the whole game, bearing in mind, actually, Norwich's performance was pretty poor, Pete. There will be people, I can hear them in my ear now, saying, well, yeah, come on, calm down. It was a 1-1 draw against Ipswich and we were rubbish for the most part.
Yeah, but I think, other than a couple of exceptions, the quality of football in derbies has been fairly horrendous. That first half, I mean, we were lucky to go in at 0-0, but it's never about football. Those watching it on Sky Sports that are neutrals aren't going to be treated to a feast of football, are they, for sort of the tackles that were flying in. It's it's 1-1. It's the performance wasn't the key issue here. It's, I mean, yeah, Grant was immense. I mean, even he's not the quickest, but in the 95th minute, to be the keeper to that ball and just to show, and then his celebration afterwards is probably the best bit. So, yeah. But it's no fan goes into this game expecting to see 50 passes. And I mean, I think in the first half we barely managed two in a row. So no. It's never about the quality of football; it's just about not letting them win.
I mean, Norwich were awful in the first half. I thought Ipswich were good, but then you look at the saves Angus Gunn had to make. There was one which was outstanding, but it was offside anyway. Mm. And the rest, you kind of really expect him to say. What was it, you, Clark, who came up with the line about Grant Hanley running? Looking like a... Go on, Dave.
That was someone on Twitter. I don't know whether I should repeat it, to be honest. I think it might have been quite rude, but...
Was it?
Yeah.
About a horse?
It was... Yeah. I can't remember who it was.
An injured horse.
Yeah, injured horse.
Yeah, there may have been a few profanities in there as well, but it was something
to get the beeper out again.
It was something like... I can't remember who I saw wrote it on Twitter. It was like, Grant Hanley's quite... quick for a guy that runs like an injured horse, which was sort of quite funny.
I see the point of that. I mean, I thought he was brilliant, and my man crushes in football are proper defenders, and he is a proper defender. I mean, I go back Duncan Forbes, Malky, those sort of type of guys, but he's just a really big, rugged, does the job. And I thought he did the job brilliant yesterday. I thought at times yesterday, closer, looked a bit unsteady to me. Obviously, that's all forgotten now with the goal, but Hanley just remained really strong. And there were times when he was almost going to get beaten, but quickly recovered. And his ability to read the game, I think, gets away with the fact that he's not Usain Bolt, but he does a brilliant job.
I certainly thought Christoph Zimmermann looked a bit shaky. That's the shakiest he's been for a while.
The pace to get back with Garner in the first half as well, the one where he sort of went down hoping for a penalty, but he just out-muscled him enough, didn't he? And yeah, I mean, it's an obvious comparison to make, but it's really the first player since Malky of that type, isn't it? You know, he's got a little bit of a dirty side to him, like Tim said to you, Michael, after the game, and he's got sort of the ugly side of the game down, isn't he? So yeah, I think the nerves got the better of Norwich, to be honest, first half, particularly Zimmermann. I mean, when you accidentally kick a clearance over your head and out for a corner in the first 2 minutes, that's going to really shake your nerves, isn't it, to be fair? But whether that's because they were overpumped for the game, you know, as Daniel had said at the presser, you want the candle burning bright on Sunday, not on Thursday. So whether they went a bit Joe Hart and were bouncing off the walls in the tunnel and were too up for it, I'm not sure. But yeah, that first half is not one you're going to look back on. And like Pete says, it's almost like cup football, isn't it, a derby game, that all the cliches, form goes out of the window, etc. And that is how it felt. But I did enjoy it. I thought the atmosphere before the game was really good. Obviously, the fans had their march from Riverside, which I couldn't see because I was sort of busy doing stuff in the stadium. But watching it back, that looked really good. And presenting Rob Newman, John Polston, Mark Bowen on the pitch beforehand, that helped. And I thought it was, you know, crackling along nicely. It was an intense, proper derby.
Yeah, word there for Neil Thompson, Tom as well, who writes for Along Come Norwich, and all those guys who put the effort in with the banners and the march. I think it did really woke everything up, because it's normally so sleepy when you turn up for a Sunday lunchtime kickoff, especially even for a derby. So good job with those guys. Neil had a drum as well, and I've already seen there's been a discussion on Twitter about whether there should be a drum, more drums over the course. I'm not personally a fan of the drum, but then I couldn't hear the drum and it just seemed to help stoke the atmosphere, which I guess is ideal. So maybe not more drums, just make sure the people who need to hear it can hear it. But you were in the lower Barclays.
I was in the same stand as him, and you could hardly hear it. It helped with the beat. It wasn't like the England band that used to have on TV being really annoying. It just helped with the tempo, and I think, yeah, that's fine. If you start bringing in a whole band, then it's going to be ridiculous. But I think one drum to keep the tempo going is fine by me.
And on sax is.
As long as they all get an introduction. Brian Adams style.
We could do the drum on the top of the River Inn, because it can be a bit quiet up there. Any musical instrument, I don't know, a clarinet would be great.
Clarinet, there you go. I don't think there's many football clarinets around, but I think there should
Joe
be now.
Hart, yeah.
I think, Dave, you mentioned Martin Waghorn going down under Grant Hanley's challenge. Joe Garner was going down in the box. We had Dominic Iorfa take a lovely little tumble that he managed not to get booked for. It was a curious balance of falling over and shoving over, really, from Ipswich, which is something they've perfected under Mick McCarthy, and we'll come on to more of that in a bit. Just to flag up, you can hear all of my interview with Tim Closer. That's on the podcast feed and, of course, on the Pinken.com website, and footage of the march, which is also on the Pinken YouTube channel. Obviously, it is a bunch of marching Norwich City fans. There is some bad language in there, but, you know, as long as you're aware of that before you start watching, then that's what you're going to get. Such a rich seam of things from this derby. I was talking to Dave about it earlier today. We had fan cams from in the ground, however legal that is in terms of viewing. The rules seem to have gone out the window now for the time being anyway, and just the views from the Ipswich fans, their celebrations, and then the sight of the Barkley just jumping up and down. We had the obviously BBC Radio Suffolk commentary, which I'm convinced will be played for years and years to come, because this
That's my line.
it's an incredible piece of commentary which sums up a situation that is a historic situation. This is the longest unbeaten run in this fixture, and I think Sky claimed it was the 105th East Anglian derby ahead of kickoff on Sunday, which surprised me because I was sure it was 101.
There's all different, depends what competitions you include. If it's League, FA Cup and League Cup, that was 101.
Thank you.
But if you've got friendlies, Texaco Cup, all that nonsense, then it's about 140. So
really random. But either way, history in terms of the run, history in terms of the feeling and the events and the sample of how everyone took it in around the day. It's, as I said, some people may look at it and go, well, it's a bit drab and this, that and the other, but it's not. It was special, and everyone will kind of remember it, and some will hurt from it from a long time, and Tim Close's name will be synonymous with it now.
Absolutely. And, you know, it must be the latest goal ever in a derby. I've never known of one so late in the game, clearly, with what, it was 20 seconds to go.
Eight seconds.
Yeah.
Officially, but yeah.
And I think before the game, a draw would have felt not great. You know, we would have expected to have won, but you know, after 93 minutes, then I'd have grabbed anything for an equaliser. I think it's just that, don't let them win. You know, seeing McCarthy's face and all those things that fans want. You know, to stop the others celebrating and all of that just meant that the celebrations that they were. And there's obviously been lots of comment about, you know, Norwich players jumping around, the £200 million they've spent, wherever that figure comes from. But yeah, it was fantastic, and Dave's absolutely right. That's what football's all about.
Well, Mick McCarthy's been winding himself up for about 4 years about how the money Norwich have had, regardless of the fact that they earned it by getting promoted. It's not like someone's just dumped it on them. And of course, today we had Luke Chambers delivering his latest masterclass and stirring the pot. I mean, probably out of pure feeling of being so gutted that the 89th minute, he was supposed to be the man who had delivered a first derby win for himself and for Mick McCarthy.
Chucked some fuel on the fire, didn't he? I love derby games. When Norwich were in the Prem, I always said that I hoped Ipswich could get promoted, because it's like Superman and Lex Luthor, as I put it in our Q&A this lunchtime. You know, you can't live with them, can't live without them. Norwich City isn't the same without Ipswich Town. These derbies are what people look forward to. When those fixtures came out at the start of the season, it was like, when's Ipswich? And I love that intensity of it all. So, yeah, second half, Bielkowski made two really good saves from Madison. One excellent save from Nelson Oliveira, who I'd imagine we'll come on to. But the celebrations were just mad. Like, where was James Madison going? Like, you watch the highlights. Yeah, he just veers off. I saw someone describe him as Forrest Gump on Twitter. And yeah, the subs, Pinto and Reed came running on. It was just crazy. And for that to be an equaliser. And the fact that we'll remember that goal as much as you will, perhaps, you know, Jerome in the playoffs and Leon McKenzie's goals at Portman Road, all those ones that we talked about to death, Grant Hull, etc., etc. I think that's quite an achievement, really, from Tim. So fair play to him.
I think it was just the fact of what it denied Ipswich.
Yeah.
That's what that goal was all about. Should we talk about Nelson Oliveira now then, probably, Pete? Because he's a man who seems to be getting stick. And it's horrible because he's, what, is it 11 games now without a goal, I think?
Yeah.
So it's a long time, given he's Norwich's primary striking outlet. He, at times, is being asked to hold the ball up, and he can't. I think we're pretty clear he cannot really hold the ball up. So the way he wants to play is okay at times, but it's very a narrow style. And if the game needs a bit of adaption, Nelson isn't really involved in it. But what I would say, I found his character and his effort, I don't really have a problem with that. And you can see everyone around him is willing for it to happen. I guess there's a problem that he hasn't really still got much competition, and that's not helping.
No, like you say, the job he's being asked to do isn't his style of play. It's, I noticed it when the window closed, that the effort from him seemed to ramp up a bit. And then I don't think the fans are getting so much on his back now. I think they now feel for him. And you saw when that shot was saved and he just collapsed on the floor and just lay there. And I think it was someone picked him up, yeah, and just like willing him on. It's just everyone just wants him to score. But like you say, competition, it's, he hasn't really got anyone breathing down his neck. The longer it goes on, the job is to put the ball in the back of the net, and he's just not doing it. But I think there's no qualms at the moment with him amongst Norwich fans.
I think a lot of Norwich fans will feel that that's partly Norwich's fault, that they haven't maybe got enough competition for Nelson. I mean, Dennis Schrobini is there, he's getting the odd minute. It does look like he can hold the ball up, but I'm sensing that Daniel Farke doesn't feel he's ready yet, and that therefore he's not really pushing Nelson at the moment.
From the two looks we've had it of him, it's both been in chaotic moments, really, isn't it? He's come on when Norwich are you know, either clinging on or chasing the game. So it's difficult to judge him. But, I mean, he looks more like your traditional centre-forward type than Nelson, like someone who maybe could hold up the ball and win those headers and stuff. And that has never been Oliveira's game. So that's kind of the downfall of this season, isn't it? That, you know, 32 goals in 32 games, you can't get... Well, it's very, very unlikely you can get near the top six averaging a goal a game. And, you know, they've got to sort that out, because it's the same for Josh Murphy as well. He's pretty much playing as a striker, a little bit as a winger, and it doesn't really suit him. You know, he was holding the ball up on halfway several times yesterday, and that's not where you want Josh Murphy, is it? You want him running at defenders and cutting in and shooting. How many times when Josh was younger did you see him cut in from the left, shoot on his right, top corner? But, you know, whether it's at youth level or whatever. So that front three still isn't quite right. You know, Madison's not really having an impact in the box either, as much as his work around the box is very good. That's the area they've got to improve, and I guess Moritz Leitner is probably going to be the key to that. He wasn't brilliant yesterday, but you've seen that there's a top class player in there somewhere, so maybe they can just reorganise a little bit, but perhaps after Wolves.
It's all about the runners beyond Madison for me, and Pritchard actually gave Norwich that for a short spell. It's a shame that that's gone, and maybe Anel Hernandez will come in and give him Josh a little push in the next few weeks if Farke does decide to dip him out, which is a possibility. You get the sense that, you know, as Dave's already touched on, really tough game at Wolves on Wednesday. You know, it might need a little freshening up in what is a really tough period.
I do wonder with Josh, because we always scream, I'm sure everybody else does, as soon as he gets the ball, run straight, take people on, do what we know he can do. And I don't know whether it's his lack of confidence that makes him stop, turn back, maybe look inside, or whether he's told, don't just go like a headless chicken down the wing and take everybody on. Maybe it's a little bit of both. But I would like to see him a little bit more direct than he sometimes has been.
Anything more on the derby? Okay, in terms of Ipswich, just for a brief moment of reflection, do we think this will be the last time Mick McCarthy is at a derby, an East Anglian derby? Clark, you're shaking.
I think it's got to be. I mean, you know, what happened at the after the substitution, after the goal following the substitution, that those words, you know, that can't carry on, that sort of relationship between the manager and the fans. And I just think it's probably only going to be Evans, and obviously he's the owner, so he does what he wants, but... if the clubs are going to progress, surely they've got to get someone with a little bit more to do something different, because otherwise they are just going to, you know, we'll be applauding after 86 minutes soon, you know. All those seasons, which is quite funny, but they've got to make a change, haven't they?
He can pretend he didn't do it towards his own fans as much as he likes. He did. All his coaching staff and all his players ran towards the players who'd scored the goal to celebrate. He ran in the opposite direction to, you know, do what he did, swear at them and pump his fists in that sort of Italian style. I know he's not Italian, I know he's a Yorkshireman / Irishman. Yeah, but I don't really know what to describe it as, but I was just thinking about it. Imagine if after an Alex Neil game towards the end of his reign, so, you know, Brentford 0-0 New Year's Eve when he got quite a bit of stick. Imagine if Norwich had scored and Alex Neil had done that to Norwich fans. That's what you're looking at, essentially, apart from the fact that Mick's been there 6-7 years, whatever it is. So would he have survived as long as he would? Not a chance. Norwich fans would have wanted him out of the club ASAP. So Ipswich fans have clearly had enough of him, and he's had enough of them. If he's there at the start of next season, I would be absolutely shocked.
I think even before that celebration, his days are numbered, aren't they? But it also works for him as well, because he's not an horrendous manager, and the longer he stays there and just doesn't do anything, his options, if he does leave, are going to be limited.
I wonder how much.
I imagine they are already, but
I wonder how much he's on. Maybe he's on. Maybe he's on a little bit more wages than we think. I don't know. It's really interesting, because I've always been convinced that once he leaves, it would be a case of Ipswich, be careful what you wish for. But if they do get that appointment right, say they bring in the Cowleys or something like that, and they bring a bit of energy and, of course, play the same football, then, you know, maybe that will invigorate them.
Whoever comes in, if his situation stays as it is, they'll just be told that there's nothing, you can't buy anyone. It's well, like, this is a situation for you.
But they have owners that pump £7 million in every year to, you know, at least keep things ticking over. Norwich haven't got that.
No.
And there are plenty of managers around the country who do a lot with very little, don't they? I mean, you think up and down the country, League Two, League One, certainly the National League, very little cash, but bring the best out of players. And you mentioned the Cowleys. I mean, what they've done at Lincoln is phenomenal, and someone like that could do really well there.
And how much longer are the owner's going to look at crowds of 13,000 in a stadium that holds, what, 35? And just think, this has gone
don't get carried away.
30?
Yeah.
32,
I think. 32. Yeah.
And there wasn't even 13 there, was there? Against Burton? I heard it was nearer 10, 11.
Was it?
Yeah.
I think they bumped the figure.
Yeah. I think it probably includes season ticket holders, doesn't it? Yeah.
Weren't they? Yeah.
And there's, what, five? That, it's always Burton, isn't it? Because they bring, what, 168,
I think, Burton fans.
Although I noticed yesterday, actually, Bristol City took 500 to Leeds. Was it Leeds, wasn't it? Thought I got it the wrong way around then. Yeah, 500 to Leeds. I know it was a 4 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday, but for a big club like Bristol City, I mean, Norwich, when's the last time Norwich took 500 away fans to a game that meant something?
Well, when you give away a 3-goal lead against Sunderland at home, maybe they're all sensing it's gone wrong. Plus, they've had quite an expensive few months trawling around the world.
In the Championship, and that just seems very low food, because it wasn't... Oh, no, it was on telly, I suppose, wasn't it? Yeah.
And of course, we'll probably be keeping an eye on Bristol City, because if you look at the table, it's probably the only team Norwich could possibly catch, even if your yellow and green specs are still attached to your head. One word answers: who's going to finish higher in the table, Norwich or Ipswich?
Norwich.
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 I'm clearly asking the wrong people, but there you go. That's the end of the East Anglian Derby chatter for another year, assuming we're both in the same division next year, of course. So Wolves is then on Wednesday, a little trip. Actually, after this game, Norwich's run is a little bit more inviting, which actually has me more worried, because that's when they're going to trouble themselves. In the words of Tim Closer, he said, it's good to take on the really good teams, because then you can prove you're as good as them. And I was like, that's great. So then what happens when Bolton rock up? Do you like, well, can't be bothered, really. We should beat you anyway. But that's another discussion, and I'm sure Norwich will prove me completely wrong. Conversely, Wolves, it's as tough as it gets. They are the side that will win the title. They've looked like that side since about September. And of course, it'll be a reunion with John Ruddy and Ryan Bennett. Pete, a free hit?
Yeah, there's nothing to lose here. It's like you said, they've won the title. When they came to Carrow Road, you can see they're just a class above. And I think if we get anything from the game, be delighted.
Anything from the game, Dave? I mean, let's be clear, and I know you've already touched on this. If Norwich play how they play on Sunday, it's going to be a pretty ugly evening.
Yeah, if they play like they did in the first half, I'd expect them to be 3-4 nil down at half time against that team. I mean, you know, it's not a level playing field when you're playing Wolves. They've spent, what, 18 million on Ruben Neves? I think that's the right one. And he's one of several players that they've invested big money in. Of course, they were willing to pay John Ruddy and Ryan Bennett's Premier League wages, which is why they were able to take them off Norwich's hand for free last summer. And to be fair, John and Ryan seem to have sort of fitted in nicely into that mix. They've got a very experienced manager who was manager at Porto. You know, that doesn't happen in the Championship unless you offer the guy a lot of money and big wages. So, yeah, it is a free hit. I suppose you treat it a bit like a cup game. It's just whether... whether you park the bus. Obviously, Norwich have done quite well at keeping teams out away from home, and they've got that little bit of confidence on the road. So ideally, I think you'd like to see some changes. You know, give Srebeni, Hernandez, bring Pinto back, maybe give Leitner a little bit of a rest and bring Vrančić back in. But if you make those changes, are you then risking getting a bit of a hiding at Wolves? I mean, at the end of the day, the important game is Bolton, so perhaps you give those guys a chance. What harm can they do? But you've got to stick with that back three and Angus Gunn that you know can keep things out. And as much as you would like to give Alex Tetti a rest, I think you need him at Wolves just to stop them getting away with the game. So yeah, difficult decisions there for Daniel. But Bolton, I mean, they were poor when Norwich went up there, but Norwich were even poorer. That was the performance that sealed Cameron Jerome's fate, because he was dreadful that day, wasn't he? And they just were just overwhelmed by a sort of a direct team, as they have been a few times this season. So yeah, give it your best shot, but Bolton is the priority, I would say.
I imagine Ivo Pinto will come back in. I just kind of think that maybe if Norwich tuck in, you know, they've done it before at Middlesbrough when they were, you know, playing a bit better than they have been now. And just in those situations, Norwich have been able to contain sides. I know it's different with Wolves, but, you know, Maurice Leitner may well get a bit more space in midfield. And if they do play the right balance, again, that's the question that will be posed of Daniel Farker. Maybe they can cause an upset.
Yeah, and certainly Wolves won't do what Ipswich did in terms of spoiling the game, will they? They'll want to come out and play some football. So, but no, as Pete said, when Wolves come down here, I remember saying at the time, they were as good a championship side as I've seen for a long time. So they'll win the league by, what, 10, 12 points? So
already 11 points clear, aren't they?
Probably more than that, yeah.
I don't know if they'll be close to 100 points probably by the end of it, to be honest.
And I guess they haven't got to the stage yet where they're going to start taking it easy. I mean, obviously, the last few games they will, but at this stage, they're going to want to be, you know, getting it wrapped up, aren't they? So I think they'll really be on it. It's going to be a really tough game.
Well, I mean, they drew 1-1 at Preston on Saturday, and Preston were down to 10 men for half an hour. They lost 2-0 at home to Nottingham Forest, who, I'm not being funny, they're erratic, but hardly any great shake. So there are vulnerabilities there.
Well, I suppose there are with anyone, but I think Wolves would have finished comfortably in mid-table in the Premier League this year. You know, Bonatini, Caballero, they both look like real talented players. Jota has been a bit of a revelation for them defensively as well. We all know, I mean, John Ruddy's got the most clean sheets in the division, and just judging on Twitter, which isn't always the best barometer because opposition fans obviously like to lord it over rival teams, but the Wolves fans seem to really like Ryan Bennett. So he's found his, he wasn't playing first part of the season either. He's forced his way in there and then stayed in the team. So fair play to both of them, really. But yeah, if anyone manages to get anywhere near Wolves, then they'll be going up as well.
They will, which is what some of the teams are vying to do, obviously in second at the moment. John and Ryan then, Pete, nice warm applause for them both.
Yeah, of course there will be. I mean, neither of them left under a cloud, did they? So
goodbye, number one big man.
I guess Ryan's exit was a bit, I mean, Norwich fans weren't too fussed about that, but I noticed that the home game, every both times Wolves scored, he just jogged back to his position, didn't join in the celebration. So I'm guessing he's still got links here, hasn't he? We saw him at,
he's a bit marty,
didn't he? So
yes, I was going to say, he rocked up at the CSF, yeah, Community Sports Foundation on the buzzer quiz a few weeks later. So
he's got family around here, isn't he? Because he sort of spent some of his time growing up in the Yarmouth area, didn't he?
So there we go, you know, it'll be like playing his boyhood club, I'm sure. We look forward to it. We probably never really saw the best of Ryan Bennett in Norwich, in all honesty, which was a shame, but he won't be the first player that has to deal with that, nor the last.
I need to say, Molyneux is not an easy place to play, having played on that pitch myself once.
At Molyneux?
Yeah.
Really?
Really bumpy surface.
When was this, Clarky?
It was about 2-3 years ago. Okay. Played a charity game. Didn't suit my perfect, you know, pure style of football.
You need a bowling green, don't you? You need a carpet.
That's ideal for me because I can't play football very well. So the rugged surface levelled it out a little bit.
It always looked like a big pitch there.
Very big pitch, yeah, yeah. I was blown after about 2 minutes.
Brilliant.
Here we go.
Which is something we hopefully won't see Norwich do, because they do seem to be, they seem to be growing in their fitness. Mm. I remember speaking to Christoph Domagala last week after the chill out room at Colney was revealed, which looks very good. I quite fancy one day having a game of FIFA there. But he was quite, you know, he felt Norwich would feel the benefit now of all the work they put in this year. And it's not long that we've, you know, it's been a while since we saw Norwich fade in a game and not really push on as it grew. And, you know, they do seem to finish strong. It's more a question of starting slowly in a way.
We talked a bit about this in the Q&A at lunchtime, didn't we, online? And I dug out the stats, and it's 11 goals after the 75th minute in the league this year. Only six teams have scored more than that. So that's good going. But they did concede in the 89th minute against Ipswich, so.
And that's 11 out of 32 goals in that last little period.
It's the third, isn't it?
Pretty much. You know, fitness, you can say what you want for fitness, but if you don't beat Luke Chambers to the header at a corner, then Alex Tetti, yeah. Then, you know, fitness doesn't really matter.
I think you just got out-muscled, basically, and that was that. Yeah. There we go. Right, OK, we're done. Don't forget that myself, Dave and Paddy Davitt will all be at Molyneux in midweek. We're going to do it in a day. We're going to take it on. We're going to suck it up, go there, see how the football pans out, and then get home with a coffee. Pretty much. That's the glamour behind the scenes. So follow us, pinken.com, for all the build-up live coverage and reaction after the game, of course. And then it's Bolton and Carrow Road, and we'll do it all over again on Saturday. Dave, is there anything I'm forgetting? We've got FA Youth Cup game coming up at some point in the...
Yeah, their opponents have been confirmed. Birmingham 1-3-1 at Bury Friday night. So it's Birmingham at home in the FA Youth Cup quarterfinals, and I think that will be next midweek because they've only got about a 2-week window to get it played. And if they were to get past Birmingham, of course, then there would be a 2-legged semi-final against Fulham or Chelsea, which would obviously be a good story given the FA Youth Cup final of 2013 in the semi-finals. So, yeah, hopefully a decent crowd for that because they've played all their games at Carrow Road so far this season in the Youth Cup.
Indeed, absolutely. And they're doing very well, that group of youngsters. So we'll keep you abreast of all that. The Pinken Show is obviously taking a break this week because Norwich are playing at Wolves on Wednesday night. So hopefully the show will be back the following week. Thanks, gents. Thanks, Clarky.
Oh, no. I just said once more.
Thank you, DF.
All right.
And cheers, Pete.
Cheers, Michael.
We are going to do the quiz, aren't we? The Norwich City Fan Social Club quiz on Friday. Is that Friday?
Do our listeners care about that?
Well, you know, if anyone's there, we'll see you there. Hello. And you can beat us.
Can you get photos of Michael Bailey? There you go.
Yes, thank you, Pete.
Yeah, this Friday.
Yeah. Good. I hope you're more on the ball when the quiz comes along.
You had a nice rowdy bunch to kick off your video after the game on on Sunday, didn't you?
Yes. Well, that was good fun, I thought. I was just trying to rein them in because they did the whole song and I was like, I'm not recording. And so they were very disappointed. And then they were just too eager. I was like, just wait until I press record. You can watch that as well at the Pinken YouTube channel, should you so wish. Right, we are done now. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. And we'll be back after the Wolves game, probably. See you then.